Welcome to the News and Why It Matters. I am Sarah Gonzalez. We are joined by two very special guests today. We have Sheriff Bill Wayburn from Tarrant County.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much for being here. And Remy Adeleke.
Yes, ma'am.
Who is, you are a jack of all trades. So you're a former Navy SEAL. Yeah. You're an actor. Yeah. You just do a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything.
Just make us all jealous over here. And then we've got Jason Howerton, Director of Social Media Engagement, social media guru.
Last and least among this table, I would say.
Well, we just already know you here.
Yeah.
We had to introduce our special guest first.
Talking about a SEAL and a sheriff. Okay.
It's true.
It is what it is. It is what it is. I'm aware.
What's your top story today, Jason?
So I want to talk about, you might have recalled the push to censor people on Facebook. That I want to talk about how that is a coordinated effort that has now moved to YouTube. And I think it's a little more involved than we think.
Okay. All right. Sheriff.
I want to talk about being very optimistic with a little bit of cynicism involved with the plan with Mexico now on what we got and how we're dealing with the border and how they're dealing with their borders.
I'm so glad this is your story because I can't wait to hear your take on that. And Remy.
I'd like to talk about upcoming event. I'm going to be doing speaking at Rikers Island Jail to the inmates who are graduating with their high school diploma, which I think is a big deal.
Yeah. That is a great
deal. That is. I can't wait to get into that also. First, we want to thank our sponsor, iTarget Pro. So I checked with these gentlemen here sitting at the table who obviously are very well versed in shooting a gun.
Yeah.
And I asked them beforehand, have you heard of iTarget Pro? And they both said no. And I said, oh, I can't wait to talk to you about iTarget Pro. So what they do at iTarget Pro, they've got it's a laser bullet. It's just a laser bullet. That's the easiest way to explain it. It's a laser bullet that you put into your gun so that you can dry fire. So it's not actually coming out and it stays in it and you can dry fire over and over and over again. And you've got an app that you can put on your phone. And if you guys can see over there, they brought it to the studio and we all used it. But
can I use this as like a moment to like be selfish and try to get better at shooting and ask these experts how, especially people who want to carry and maybe be in a situation where you might need to be, mm-hmm. you know, have it be really well versed on drawing, firing. How important in training, like, do experts do a lot of dry firing to make sure you're ready for that?
I do a lot of dry firing and I do a lot of drawing from the holster.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very interested in this product.
Yeah, absolutely. And the teams, I mean, you don't start shooting on the range until you dry fire for at least 2 days.
Straight. A lot of clicks.
Yeah, so we spend a lot. It's the best way to kind of get used to the mechanisms and trigger pull and get more accurate. So,
well, there you go.
Yeah.
I guess I need one.
So you can download the app on your phone and keep track of, you know, where you're shooting, where you're hitting, keep track of how you're doing. And right now, if you go to itargetpro.com, you can get 10% off plus free shipping with promo code NEWS. So go to itargetpro.com. I don't know what their shipping situation looks like, but Father's Day is coming up. It's around the corner. If you can get that expedited shipping, that's a really good Father's Day present. Promo code NEWS. Hello, Sheriff's family. itargetpro.com. All right, Jason.
So obviously everybody, or I shouldn't say everybody, but most people have heard about what happened with Steven Crowder, mm-hmm. Over the last week. You know, his YouTube page got hit, demonetized and, basically just came under assault for, some jokes that he told, some obviously edgy jokes that he told. And, as this has kind of materialized, I've started to notice what's going on in the media and just in, kind of that left-leaning circle.
Can I interrupt you really quickly?
Sure.
So I just want to clarify, he was demonetized on YouTube not for breaking policy.
Correct.
They specifically said he didn't actually break.
They called it borderline.
The terms. Yes, they said it was borderline, and you know it hurt people's feelings. So
it hurt people's feelings.
We did it anyway.
And some powerful people made a lot of noise. Right.
Yeah.
That's what happened. And so
right.
he was demonetized. And I just want to be clear about something because I as I've been defending Crowder, I've gotten a lot of people on Twitter come at me and you know accuse me of being a homophobe and like defending hate speech and this and that, like endorsing, like defending somebody's right to say something or somebody's right to joke, or like with me in comedy, I feel like there should be no restrictions on comedy, even if it's not funny or if it's offensive. defending somebody's right to say something is not the same as endorsing it. Mm-hmm. It's not the same as, I don't have to, I think Crowder's funny. I think he's great. Is his Vox bit my favorite bit? No, but that doesn't matter. Like,
people have the right to be jerks in this
right,
country.
It doesn't matter. Like, that's not the point of what I'm saying. But anyway, I just wanted to get that out of the way because there seems to be a lot of confusion about that. Like, I defend Bill Maher to be super offensive too. It's like, mm-hmm. it's a different kind of thing. But so what I'm seeing happening, though, the New York Times had a piece today where they outlined this gentleman and his journey into the far right of YouTube is what they call it. And with this piece, as you can see, the making of a YouTube radical is what they call it. And in this piece, they kind of conflate a lot of the controversial conservative and you know, the Alex Joneses of the world, the conspiracy. They kind of lump them all into this one category. And kind of what I'm seeing play out is this push to do that, to put all, like, the Steven Crowders of the world, Alex Jones, this whole mix of
Ben Shapiro
into this one pot. And now the push now from the New York Times, from Vox, from the Washington Post is like these voices are dangerous, mm-hmm. and something needs to be done because they're radicalizing young men. I think they said specifically white men, right? This is the narrative that's being drawn. So my fear, as I'm just watching this march get louder and louder, is that it doesn't stop with demonetizing Crowder, right? We know that there are people who want him deplatformed for quote-unquote hate speech or whatever it is. I don't think this is something that just goes away. We saw what happened with with Facebook, mm-hmm. Alex Jones. That was kind of pushed by CNN and Oliver Darcy, who I'm familiar with and used to, you know, do a lot of things together. But that push came and it was relentless until he was removed from the platform. Some of the other people who do conspiracy theories were removed from the platform. So I kind of feel like what I'm seeing is a more concerted effort disguised as journalism, like this mm-hmm. piece that we saw from the New York Times, to say, this is danger, hate speech. What do we do? How do we get them off? Do they need to be off the platform? And a lot of times what happens when the media pushes this, that's the pressure that gets the YouTubes, the Facebooks to actually act and start doing stuff like, hey, sorry, Crowder, I know you didn't break any rules, but we're going to do this anyway because we have to. And so I just want to be really careful and watch this play out, because obviously this is our livelihoods, yeah. mm-hmm. being on social media and being right-leaning, a right-leaning network. I'm very concerned, and I don't think that this ends with Crowder being demonetized. I think we're going to just see this kind of creep and creep and creep, some more people getting deplatformed and really non-personed for you know, having opinions that don't really go about. And if you read this article, I'll make this last point. If you read this article, a lot of it is based on the fact that conservative content seems to do better on YouTube than non-conservative content. And this is how they explain it. A few progressive YouTube channels flourished from 2012 to 2016, but they were dwarfed by creators on the right who had developed an intuitive feel for the way YouTube's platform worked and were able to tap into an emerging wave of right-wing populism. So basically what they're trying to say is that the reason why stuff on YouTube does better is not that the conservatives are better at messaging or have better content or just resonate more with America at large. It's that they're so extreme that the algorithm is rewarding them for being radicals, right? That's what they're mm-hmm. saying, is that the people are getting to them because of the way the algorithm goes. The more outraged you are, the more your videos get viewed, which I don't think is the case. I think good content is good content. Of course, you're going to have extremists on both sides mm-hmm. who are mixed into that. Right. But that's kind of the push. Instead, I think the reality is that progressives suck at content. It's just how I feel, because...
Well, they don't think anything is funny.
They don't think anything is funny.
They're offended by everything.
They can't joke about anything. Everything's offensive, and it's boring, lame content. And that's why they don't do well on YouTube. They don't do well on Facebook. They do well on CNN
yeah.
and MSNBC because people are forced to watch.
Right.
That's the difference, I think. And so the strategy seems to be, we're losing on the internet. So how do we take these voices away so that we're the only one?
Yeah.
You know, it's very dangerous when you say that I'm going to decide whose speech is really First Amendment speech
mm-hmm.
and
right.
who are we going to leave alone. That's a lot more serious. And these people that are judging your heart mm-hmm. on that you're a whatever, I think those people are absolutely more dangerous than somebody who says something, even if it's something I horribly disagree with. I know where they're at. Yeah. I know where they stand.
And you have to remember, we have the First Amendment, so that protects us to an extent. But the public forum has largely become social media.
Right.
So it's this really weird conversation that we're having now where the First Amendment stops the left from really, you know, criminalizing hate speech. Mm-hmm. But the town square is now YouTube. The town square is now Facebook. It's Twitter.
That's right.
So if they're able to censor there, that's still just as dire, I think, as something like repealing the First Amendment, because it really is clampering down on Americans' First Amendment rights, I think.
I agree.
Remy, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, I truly believe that there needs to be a standard, and that standard needs to be upheld across the board. Mm-hmm. Since I was a young kid, I've always hated the concept of favoritism and how, you know, one rule applies to one group, but another rule doesn't apply to another group. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I agree there needs to be a standard across the board and it needs to be upheld regardless of what side you're on, you know, and I don't know.
Well, then we don't have this whataboutism all the time, because... Yeah. Because there, of course, you could find somebody on the left who made offensive jokes that you could then argue should be banned, and it might just be that people on the right don't really want to do that, so it doesn't happen. But it seems to always tilt one way.
It's not even just that so much as just think of what all the negative repercussions will be in society. Because we just can't tolerate another point of view entirely. Right. Like, it's not even let's pretend that Crowder didn't say all of those hateful jokes or whatever, which they're jokes. He's a comedian. I would say get over it. But if you think that it's hateful, that's fine. The fact that you can't just allow other people to exist.
Criticize it.
Right.
If you want to.
Right. Right.
Disagree with it.
Disagree with it.
Yeah. But the fact that you have to say, I can't tolerate this because I don't agree with it. What does that say about us as a society, Sheriff?
Well, what that says is, one, is that they lack tolerance that they want us to have for them. You know, it is those people who often share no mercy or grace often needs it. Mm-hmm. And what, you know, they got to realize that when they take away that freedom, that they're taking it away from them at a different juncture. It may not be today, but it will be later. And, you know, as our forefathers, and I know that this is different than First Amendment because somebody belongs to Facebook and YouTube and all that, but it's still the exercise of speech that people, if they are not tolerant of it, they can choose not to listen to it. That's another choice. But if they're not tolerant of it, if it's not something like, you know, fire in the theater, then they need to relax and walk away from it. Criticize, disagree.
As a dad, I think about my son and how I want him, if he hears an opinion that he disagrees with or that offends him deeply, I want him to handle it like an adult. Mm-hmm. I don't want him to feel empowered to kick and scream and yell at the other person or call him an ism. I want him to be able to say, you know what, you're wrong, but I respect that. And that, I feel like, is what our society has kind of lost track of.
I think you're
right.
And
not in parents not really instilling that in their mind that you're not always going to feel like you're safe all the time. That's a life skill that I think our kids are losing, and that scares me. So as a dad, I'm like really focused on that.
Yeah. I think that's a great focus.
Amen. All right, back in a minute.
I think it's the longest I ever went just being this is one of those things that just gets me.
Before we get back into the conversation, want to thank our sponsor, Cruise Through History. So if you have not yet marked your calendars, you need to for next spring 2020. I believe it is in March. There is an amazing cruise taking place. They're going to go all around the Eastern Mediterranean. You're going to hit Venice. You're going to hit Jerusalem. You're going to hit Croatia. You're going to hit Greece. Think about it for a second. How many artifacts and how much history is involved in all of those different places. That is just like the roots of Western civilization are right there, and you're going to be visiting all of these different places. And if that wasn't enough, you're also going to be joined by Mr. Glenn Beck, Stubergear, Bill O'Reilly, Rabbi Lappin, and David Barton. And I don't know if you guys are aware, but these are the history buffs that you want to be surrounded with when you go to these places. They will tell you so much more than you ever thought could be possible to be known.
Total nerds.
Total nerds. But it's going to be an amazing, amazing time. Bring your kids, bring your grandkids. You can go to comesailaway.com to check out. They have different package, you know, package information. Check out the details there. Pick your package, book it, mark your calendar, spring 2020. Go to comesailaway.com to learn more.
Cool.
All right, Sheriff, let's talk about what's going on with Trump and the tariffs and Mexico.
One, I think the president made a great deal. And if they're really deploying, you know, it's so exciting that they're deploying, we hope, 6,000 National Guardsmen, and one, sealing their southern border. If they seal that, that's a game changer for all those people coming up from South America. And they also have frozen 27 or 29 bank accounts of people that are financing this. And some of those people are in the United States. So, and I understand they may be going to disclose who these bank accounts belong to.
Really?
That could be big.
That would be huge, wouldn't it?
Yes.
And we see who is absolutely undermining and causing chaos. Now, the second thing that they said they were going to do was they're going to interrupt the human trafficking and the routes of the traffickers. Now, when I think that they start doing that, the biggest concern I have is that it is then going to get bloody. The cartel is not going to go quietly into that good night.
Yeah.
They are going to fight that tooth and nail. And right now, we know from McAllen to El Paso that the Mexican side of the Rio Grande is owned by the cartel. Mm-hmm. And you're paying to get across. But, you know, the droves of people that are coming across, this could be a game changer. But I think it's going to be a tough game changer for the Mexican government. I think they've got an uphill battle.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I was going to say, you know, the cartels have notoriously had, you know, corrupt officials in the
Absolutely.
Government. So to pull this off, what you're talking about sounds like it would require a top-down kind of a ready to defend their, I guess, their sovereignty from the cartels in a way if they want to actually enforce policies.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And if they've frozen these bank accounts this soon, they already knew who was doing that.
Oh, I have a good question for you. So
yeah.
if this did happen and they essentially had to go to war with the cartels, is that something, because technically it involves our national security as well, is that something that the U.S. military should think about getting involved in with Mexico, or is that kind of like a fight we don't
You know, that's a great question. I've been so far removed from operations for 3 years already, so it's really hard for me to kind of give it a direct answer. But will they get involved? I'm not sure. I mean, at least at a tier one probably level or a special operations level, there will be stuff over the border. But, you know, due to our rules, we can't really operate on the border, at least from what I remember. But, yeah, if it happens, it'll probably most likely be, you know, soft units on the other side.
Outside of the full deployment to Mexico and stuff like that.
Yeah. At the request of the government.
Yep. Yeah.
How did you feel about when Trump initially said, we're going after Mexico with the tariffs, to combat illegal immigration, this is how we're going to go about it? Because I know with China, it was very easy to see, okay, we're talking about a trade deficit and then we're talking about tariffs, which factors into that. When you're talking about illegal immigration, it feels a little bit different. So when he first announced the tariffs on Mexico, I cringed a little bit. I went, oh, I don't know if that's going to work. And then 24 hours later, I said, okay, he is a negotiator and it sounds like I'm wrong. And he knew what he was doing all along. What was your first thoughts?
Well, I tell you what, I cringed too. I thought, uh-oh, here we go. But I will tell you that I come to find out about Donald Trump. If like him, dislike him, he is the only one providing leadership, and he's reaching for every arrow in his quiver to stop this onslaught of people coming into our country. Congress isn't doing anything. Both sides of the aisle, you know, those guys ought to be filing bills every day. Every day, Republican, Democrat, I don't care. Work, go to work. Don't come home on the weekends. Let's get this resolved. You know, you got to come home on the weekends when you were deployed, right?
I mean,
it just evening, blew home.
I was about to say yes, Fonseca. Yeah. Your question.
When we're in the middle of crisis, you stay in the fight, and Congress is not staying in the fight. The president's pulling out every quiver. So when this happened, my initial thoughts was a little bit of cringe, and I thought, but you know what? We got to do something. Mm-hmm. And then boom. There was, you know, Mexico started stepping up to the plate, and I'm optimistically, cynically excited, if that makes any sense.
I love it. I love it. Remy, really quickly before we move on to Rikers, I have a friend who her nephew is in the military, mm-hmm. and he is now stationed at the border.
Okay.
And he calls his family and he says, guys, I'm so frustrated because we can't do anything.
That's right.
They tell us we cannot do anything. All we do is pick up the phone and call Border Patrol, and we're sitting here stationed away from our families. Watching hundreds of people cross the border in the night, and we can't do anything. Why are we here?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I a few weeks, well, about 2 months ago, a buddy of mine, he's a Border Patrol guy. And I said to him, I said, hey, man, I really want to understand this. You know, I know that there are two different perspectives, and, you know, I want to understand what's going on. So he took me on a ride along up, you know, throughout the, you know, the San Diego border from Imperial Beach down towards past Chula Vista and Eastlake area. And I didn't see any troops there. Mm-hmm. But he, you know, he said that the way the laws are set up, the troops can't do anything. Mm-hmm. They're pretty much defenseless. They're just a presence. It's just more of a presence. But it is the Border Patrol guys who are the only ones who are allowed to, you know, touch or search or do any of that type of work. So, yeah, I'm not sure how I would feel if I was in that situation, if I was a troop and sitting on the border and just sitting there for the sake of sitting there, being away from my family. But
absolutely. We're just listening post there. And by the way, our Rangers, our Texas Rangers, we're patrolling the river. We're in river boats with high armament. And those guys are getting into gunfights on the other side of the border. Mm-hmm. That is happening. Mm-hmm. And the guys in McAllen have told me that they see firefights every night across the border.
Mm-hmm. I always wonder how that can be a reality in the claim is that there's no crisis, that there's never, like, that it's only women and children ever at the border. Like, I don't even know how it's allowed, and the media does a lot of this too. Like, when they talk about it, it's always focused on, which is a tragedy. Like, nobody wants women and children going through the border and almost sometimes dying. But how is this not part of the conversation constantly of keeping our law enforcement safe?
Right.
Because to me, I feel like they're getting the shaft.
They are.
With this, because we're not thinking about them, their families, their women Absolutely. And children that they have at home, right?
Absolutely. People who do not think it's a crisis have their head in the sand. They need to go to the border. These politicians that are running for office that says there's no crisis down there, my dare to them is leave your security and your entourage on this side. Have dinner in across the border in Juarez, or have dinner across the border in McAllen, and, you know, spend the night there. Mm. And then let's talk about it in the morning, because they are entering a third world country that is in war, that is at war.
Beto will go to El Paso for a nice fundraiser, but that's about all I've seen.
And then claim that we have no issue at the border.
It's the safest ever, because I'm surrounded by Secret Service and or his security and whatever.
Right, right. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, and I want to get back to Rikers Island when we come back.
Do you do a lot of that stuff?
What's that?
All right, Remy, we have a couple minutes here before we head to overtime. So tell us what you're doing over at Rikers.
Yeah, so I'm going to be speaking at Rikers Island Jail for the inmates who are going to be graduating from high school. It's interesting the way they found out about me. My book, Transformed, came out a month ago. It's called Transformed, the Navy SEAL's Unlikely Journey from the Throne of Africa to the Streets of the Bronx, and Defying All Odds. And it really chronicles my journey, but also focuses on my time in the Bronx, you know, being an at-risk youth, mm-hmm. being in the public education system in the Bronx, which was horrible at the time, and how, you know, how that street life and street culture and the lack of education, lack of good education in my area led me down some pretty dark paths. And so a few of the leadership at Rikers Island read my book, and they were just like, wow, this guy's story can be a story that can resonate with these guys, essentially give hope to them that, you know what, even though they do have a record, they can still be somebody because they're getting their education and they're moving forward. So I'm gonna be giving the commencement address to all the students, and some of these guys range from the age of 18 to 27. Essentially, I want to give these guys hope. I want them to realize that, you know what, it's not over. Yes, you make mistakes, but though people make mistakes, that doesn't mean that they don't have potential. And so I'm excited about it, and you know, hopefully it could turn into something where I can get into some more jails, and we could also see about getting more resources. And one of the things that the principal committed to doing is getting my book for the school, for in mass for the school so that they can have for next year's curriculum.
That's
so
awesome, man.
Wow. That's amazing. I want to talk a little bit more about this in overtime. I know that we've got a break coming up. So if you have not joined Blaze TV yet, what are you waiting for? You can go to blazetv.com, use promo code NEWS, and you can get $10 off your annual subscription. Overtime starts next. We'll see you there.
Up next, enjoy bonus overtime content from the News and Why It Matters. Available exclusively for podcast listeners and Blaze TV subscribers. Not a subscriber? Start your free trial at blazetv.com.
I mean, I want to get back into what you're doing at Rikers Island and, you know, speaking to those who are in jail. I want to first, can you give us a little bit more detail about your backstory? And then, if you don't mind, we can have a general conversation about, because there's a lot, I feel, to unpack here.
Absolutely. You know, growing up in the Bronx, you know, I didn't have a father. My father died when I was five. Goes back further. I was actually born in Africa. I wasn't born in the States. And the Nigerian government stripped my father of his most valuable assets, and we went from rich to poor. And so my mom relocated us to the States after my dad died. And because I didn't have a father, I tried to find a father and things. And for me, it was street culture at the time. And that led me down a pretty dark path. You know, I started out stealing from my mom, and that progressed to stealing from stores, and that progressed to stealing from jobs, and that progressed to selling drugs, and then that progressed to running high-level scams. By the time I was 19, I had built this illegal enterprise. So I was bringing in $15,000 to $20,000, sometimes $12,000 a week. Wow. I had cars, I had it all. But long story short, I got involved in a deal with a drug dealer that went bad, and that was my wake-up call that kind of said, you know what, you better get out of this street life or you're going to end up dead or in prison. Mm-hmm. Fast forward 6 months later, I went to go join the Navy because I figured that would be my way out. Wow. And the recruiter ran my background. She found out I had two warrants out for my arrest. I had a warrant in New Jersey. I had a warrant in New York. I got up, got ready to run out the office. I didn't want you to show up. and she said, where are you going? And I said, I'm getting out. And she said, do you have a suit? And I said, no. She said, do you have a collar shirt and some nice pants? I said, yes. I came back the next day, and she was in her dress uniform. And she took me to both judges, advocated on my behalf, fought for me. Both of them expunged my record. And then she fudged my paperwork to get me into the Navy. And so that for me, changed the trajectory of my life. And she did that. She was from the Bronx. So she knew how hard it would be for a kid like me growing up in the Bronx, partly being in the system, to get ahead, you know. And so led to me being where I'm at today now. And that's why I try to get back. That's why I go into the prisons and the jail and into the inner cities so kids can see me and people can see me and say, wow, like if Remy can do it and get to where he is now, then perhaps I can do it.
Yeah, I can imagine, Sheriff, that resonates quite a bit with you.
It resonates beautifully. And, you know, redemption is just such a powerful thing, and giving these people hope is, you know, one of the things I always say is that 98% of the people are hardworking people in the world, and you got 2% that you got to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
And half of one of those percentage points needs to be in prison than the rest of their natural life because they're a danger to our families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then now that percent and a half left, half a percentage of them really need to get out of politics.
I agree.
And then there's that 1% that's coming back in to be our neighbors, and we need to do the best we can for them. And this wonderful book I read talks about loving thy neighbor.
Mm. What's the name of it?
The Bible.
That's a great book.
but that's what this is about.
Yeah.
Is loving your neighbor, giving them hope, reaching out across boundaries, you know, this whole business, as we talked on the break, about 80% of the people in jail, they don't have fathers in life. And I often believe that my father died when I was 8.
Mm.
And I often believed that we don't necessarily have a poverty problem. We don't have a race problem. We have a fatherless problem in this country.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure of all the cures of it, but I believe the church is part of that cure. And I believe that the rest of us doing things like you're doing is incredible. That's an incredible ministry.
Thank you.
So
at the risk of being a straight white male, having this conversation can always be dicey. I could end up on Media Matters tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I do want to ask you something, because you said a few things about street culture and some of the other things that go down. Like, my thing has always been this. Where this conversation always hits a dead end, one side wants to say, slavery, racism, decades of racism, right?
Yeah.
Which is all true, right? The other side wants to say it's America, pick yourself up by your bootstraps, and then that's where the conversation ends. Did slavery happen? Of course. Did decades of racism put the black community in a bad spot today? Did of course.
Yes. Like,
of course there are reasons why the black community is in the spot that it's in right now, right? I think the difference of what you're saying is that, yes, you've been dealt a bad hand, right? You're in a bad neighborhood, in a bad spot, surrounded by street culture, but there is hope for you. Look at me. There is hope for you.
Yes.
You're not hopeless just because you're in a bad spot. And I feel like until we acknowledge both of those things.
I agree.
How do we go forward?
No, I agree with you 100%. And we, even going back to my story, one thing that really, you know, that I always reflect on is that is Tiana Reyes, my recruiter, because she gave me a shot. Like, if without that shot, where would I be? You know, I would still be locked into that system. So at the end of the day, I agree with you 100%. There is a part of it where I truly believe that there are elements of racism that still affects the inner city,
even if it's just
school system.
Even if it's just the effect of what happened.
Yeah.
50 years ago, right? It's still, it doesn't just end, right? Like,
yeah.
It's still, it has a lasting impact. But, like, I want to figure out, like, this is what I always say. Like, I want black people in the boardroom, not in the welfare line, right?
I agree.
Because they're, like, of course, like, they're just warball people. Like, put them in the boardroom.
Yeah.
Don't handicap them by saying that you can never be anything in this country, so here's some money. Right, that's the opposite of what I want to do.
Yes.
I want to put them in the boardroom. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes, man. And a big part of that is, you know, again, a big part of that is access, information, and opportunity. Access, information, and opportunity. And we could even look at, you know, special operations as an example. When I was growing up in the inner city, there were no special forces guys coming to high schools or inner city schools and saying, you can do this. Right? There weren't any lawyers or doctors or anything coming into inner city schools saying you could do this. You know, I live in the suburbs now. At the high schools all around me, the middle schools, you get special operations people who come in, doctors, lawyers, all the people to come in. And so when these kids see that all the time, then they're like, I can do that. But when the kids in inner city schools, when they see outside of that.
And they don't see it in school, and they don't see it in
school, and they don't see it at home, right? Then it's kind of like, what can I be? And so I think, you know, access, opportunity, and information is big for me because, you know, knowledge is power. And the public education system when I was growing up was atrocious in the Bronx. I mean, the books were all in shambles. I mean, there were no real resources for after school programs. And so if a kid is going home and he already has to try and figure out how he's going to get food to eat, you know, and his mom probably is reading at an eighth grade level herself, or father's not home, who's going to be there to give that extra support or that extra opportunity? So I agree, there's a balance, but I think that in an inner city environment, there has to be more help. And I'm not saying welfare is the answer. I'm not a big proponent because I see how that can lead people to be so dependent on it that they don't want to move forward, you know, so.
They might need help in the short term. I'm trying to think long term, right?
Yeah.
Welfare in the short term, absolutely. If you've got to feed your kids, like, no judgment.
Absolutely.
But long term, like, that's not your life. Like, that shouldn't be your life.
Yeah.
There should be a path forward for you. And I feel like as soon as we start talking about culture, like, that's where, like, saying there's the issue in the black community with, like, street culture.
Yeah.
Just admitting that
is,
like, a problem. Like, you can't say that. Because then all of a sudden you're criticizing black culture, right? But I'm not, have your culture, but, like, let's not glorify gang violence. Let's not.
Exactly. Let's treat women. Let's show that women should be honored. Let's not call women out their names or the B word or this and that. Let's not make it cool to sleep around with multiple women. Let's not make it cool to be a drug dealer.
Make it cool or, to you know, be in the boardroom.
You know, and that's why I go back to the inner city.
That's
why I'm there, because I want them to see I'm not just an actor. I'm a writer. I'm a producer. I'm an entrepreneur. I own my own consulting firm. And yes, I was a former Navy SEAL. So that's why I'm going in to try and give them this other perspective, as many people this other perspective, so they could see
Cut us off when you need to, but I'm like fascinated by this.
Okay, no, I need to cut you off. Okay. We got to get to some more news of the day. Love your story, but we got to get to some more news of the day.
I had to take him out for a drink.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It sounds like you guys need to go to happy hour after this. California just came to an agreement yesterday that will allow low-income adults between the ages of 19 to 25 who are illegally living in the United States to receive full taxpayer-funded health care benefits through California's Medicaid program. So for some reason, they're fine with their own residents, their own California residents, you know, being homeless, pooping on the streets. You know, they've got a really big human feces problem in California. And all the while, their state is crumbling. And, you know, going back to illegal immigration, they want the taxpayers to pay for illegal immigrants to have full Medicaid benefits. This is going to cost taxpayers, it's estimated, $98 million per year. Sheriff, what are your thoughts on that?
Good Californian people have to rise up and say enough is enough. Mm-hmm. You know, it's my understanding L.A. is a dying city because of the homeless and the trash and the refuge, and that's happening all over that West Coast. They have to stand up and say, we don't want this anymore. And please don't come to Texas and try to change our values.
We say that all the time on this show. They do, though.
Yes, they do.
A lot of them have been coming in.
Everywhere.
We've got all the new headquarters, mm-hmm. Toyota, State Farm. We've got a bunch of them in this area. And as we saw from that recent election, you know, I mean, Robert Francis O'Rourke, he obviously didn't win. He was too close, in my opinion, for Texas.
I agree, and I've said this before about Robert, is, you know, I just don't know what John Deere Uber he rode in on, because none of him reflects Texas. he kind of looks like the political Seinfeld show. He's interesting to watch, but there's no substance there, and his ideas are far out.
Yeah.
It's just wild.
Yeah, Remy, you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, you know, my wife is a doctor.
Okay.
And so she worked, she started out after she graduated from residency, she started in an underserved clinic. And she would get people from, because we live right on the border, we live in San Diego, and so she would get, you know, patients from Mexico that would come over. She would have to treat them.
Sure.
We would, taxpayers would have to pay for that mm-hmm. treatment. And then when she would treat some of them, you know, she would give them their follow-up care, but they wouldn't carry out that follow-up care. And instead, they would go back to Mexico and then get their whatever treatment they got down there and come back worse. And then when they came back worse, she would ask them, did you take the medication? Did you do this? And they would say no. Mm-hmm. And now we're having to pay for extra care. And so I personally don't think it's fair that, you know, I should have to pay for it. My mom, my wife should have to pay for it. And, you know, those are resources that can go to on inner city programs.
We got problems.
You know, like inner city schools.
Right? Yeah, our own.
You know what I mean? So
problems.
that's my take on it, you know, because I've witnessed it firsthand and witnessed how expensive those bills add up to, just based off of my wife's experience as a doctor in underserved.
It's not even, I mean, I agree with you completely, mm-hmm. but I also think that, you know, codifying something like this really sends a signal that we are here for you guys to come in, right?
Absolutely.
We approve of what you're doing. We approve of you illegally migrating to this country. And come on in. The doors are wide open. You think that's the message that they're trying to send?
That's the exact message. And if you're 20 years old and you've got a problem, you head to L.A. and UCLA Medical is going to take good care of you.
Yeah.
And I think California is just... You know, they're just taking one step after another to just down a slippery slope that there's going to be no return at some point.
I agree.
And I don't know what they're going to do.
They're going to get a bailout from the U.S. government. That's my prediction.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. you say good, you know, the good ones need to stand up. I'm afraid there's just not enough of them left. At this point, they've all wisened
left.
Up and already
they're
left.
In Texas.
They're here, but they better keep voting red.
That's it. I agree.
All right. Which 2020 Democrat, the poll from Friday, which 2020 Democrat is the most reasonable? Not surprising. 63% of you said Biden. 23% said Buttigieg. 8% said Bernie. That's a little bit odd. Oh, and 6% said our good friend Robert Francis O'Rourke. 8% Bernie. I'm a little bit surprised at that.
Me too.
I would have thought, I mean, well, maybe they obviously couldn't list on this poll all 2,000 Democratic candidates at this point as an option. So maybe it was just out of the options. I would have gone with maybe Kamala.
Yes, Kamala Harris, maybe.
Yeah.
I thought she would be on there someplace.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, Biden, I think it's interesting. I'd like to get both of your takes on this really quickly, if you would. Biden seems to be walking this line of trying to appeal to the moderates, but at the same time telling people he's the most progressive person in the race, and somehow he's getting away with both. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree. If Uncle Joe, depending on what camp he's at or what rally he's at, he reads a crowd pretty well. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like he goes, and Beto does this some too, or Robert does this some too, what would you like for me to be today?
Yes.
I can handle it. Just give me, you know, I'm an actor too. Let me throw it at me. And I can, my principles are wishy-washy anyway. Let's talk about it. And I think that's the reason that Joe is probably out there, you know. You know, people don't remember things that he was the one on the Security Council that voted against SEAL Team 6 taking out bin Laden. Mm. You know, he has been on the wrong side of so many fights that the majority of America agrees with.
Yeah. Remy, you want to weigh in?
You know, I haven't been following the race.
Good for you. I'm so jealous right now.
Sorry. If it wasn't, no, you didn't do it for a living.
Yeah, I know. I wish I was more read into it.
Changing.
No, you don't wish that at all. No,
I should
be. You don't want that for yourself.
You're better off.
I'm sorry.
You're good. All right, today's poll, will Trump's deal with Mexico help with illegal immigration? Right in line with our conversation, or is it time to roll out the tariffs? Let us know what you think at The Blaze's Twitter. I mean, I think they're still working that out, aren't they? They're still kind of negotiating. It's not time yet to just say, hold on, you know?
Yeah, don't say hold on yet. Yeah. We've got some cynical optimism going on, so let's see if it happens.
Yes, exactly. Let us know what you think. It is at The Blaze on Twitter. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been
we'll
fun.
See you guys tomorrow.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Great job.
Dude, that's awesome.
Thanks for listening to the News and Why It Matters. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you'd like to watch the program, become a Blaze TV subscriber and start your free trial now at blazetv.com.